If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And I'm in LA as we record this, and we are expected to have some of the rainiest days in really quite some time over through the end of this weekend. And Lakers are in a bit of a storm themselves. Mike, you're in the belly of the beast. You're, you know, behind enemy lines in the belly of the beast. We did not record yesterday, but Lakers had a had another loss against Atlanta where they gave up 130 plus points. There was an interesting pregame tweet from Christian Wood, a very interesting postgame press conference from LeBron James, and just things are bad, Mike, or at least they appear to be that way from the outside watching it on TV perspective. You guys are halfway through this six-game road trip, and curious your perspective on it, Mike, because from where I'm sitting, it hasn't looked good.
Well, there's no doubt that it hasn't looked good. I want to zoom out slightly before zooming back in. And I thought you guys nailed it yesterday about some of the like lineup issues and rotation issues is contributing to everything. But, you know, if you think about where the Lakers were at even a couple of weeks ago and what kind of where the season was going to go trajectory wise, I don't know that that has changed all that much. Just given the fact that it was always going to be tough to get out of the play-in spot, like up to the six, I still think that it's like this recent stretch is going to make it more difficult to get to the higher end of the play-in mix. But that is not out of reach. And so LeBron, when asked about the season and like the last couple games, basically said, yeah, we can beat anybody and we can also get blown out by anybody. And that remains true. If the Lakers can get to a point, the couple of games before the trade deadline and the All-Star break, and then kind of coming out of it, if they can get to the point where they're using the right lineups and they're playing the guys where they should be, then I do think they could play much better basketball and go on a little bit of a push after the break and try to replicate what happened last year. But we haven't seen signs yet that that's going to happen. And I think that's where the concern would lie. And that's part of maybe what is going on in the locker room, just with, you know, guys still not sure about the groups that they're playing with and how they're performing on a night to night basis. So that, and again, you guys dealt with that yesterday, but it's to me, the short and long of it is Hachimura, Vanderbilt, you know, what they brought at the trade deadline, making the team better, bigger, making the team more athletic, and how that supports LeBron and AD. And that the Lakers just have not gotten to those groups as much. Instead, it's been a smaller three for much of the year, whether it's Prince or Reddish. And like that to me has been the crux of why both groups are struggling some. It's not that simple. There's plenty of other stuff going on. And that's to me, though, where it starts and where cohesion could be found would be by getting back to those types of groups. And I don't expect that we're going to see that, you know, yet, at least to start the game in Boston. Maybe that would be great, but I think it's going to be a tough sledding for these next two in concert with what we just saw the last couple of games. And therefore, even if I'm painting a picture of what could happen if they get to those spots as the season goes on, is certainly not there right now. And therefore, you know, the way Pete started the podcast, Darius, is accurate.
We're 50 games into the season, Mike. Tonight's the 50th game against the Celtics. The Lakers are 24 and 25 or whatever they are. And to be having the conversation about players potentially like still not being comfortable in the groups that they're playing in, or the lineups not necessarily being as optimized. And I say that based off results, 50 games in. I'm not going to go on some long rant here. I only want to talk very much more after this. I'm just going to say to you, my concern is that even if the team starts to make those changes, where is the belief right now in the players that a change, even if it happens, is something to believe in when you've already gotten to this point? And that's just me projecting to a certain extent. But when you've gone this long and there's seemingly, from an outsider's perspective, why hasn't this been tried yet? If all of this other stuff has been tried and these have been the results and we're 50 games into the season, why hasn't that been tried? Then the belief in the whole infrastructure of the decision-making starts to wane. And I'm wondering if they're, I don't want to say past the point of no return in terms of that, because one 4-game or 5-game winning streak or one stretch of 6 out of 8 could start to like change the trajectory back. But it's mentally, it feels like the group has been beaten down as much as the record. That's an issue where, again, maybe I'm projecting and I'm as far away from the team as possible, right? Further than both of you, obviously. And it's like, well, damn it. Even if things do course correct, how do you actually stay on that course and get the buy-in if, from my perspective, it's deteriorated enough now?
That's why it's super important to course correct as early as you can. And that's why, you know, we were raising alarm bells earlier in the year of like, hey, this is on the wrong track. And it's something that I do think that we need our leaders to step up on every level and come together, right? I have my thoughts on, hey, if we did this, if we played that lineup or did that, things would be so much better. But I do think that we're on that, and this is something I've talked about on the pod, having an eye on for a minute, is we're at that point where if you start to lose spirit and belief to a certain degree, it doesn't matter the lineup that you play. It doesn't matter the scheme that you're running to a great degree. There's that lack of belief. And so that is something that, Mike, there's been an inertia to this season of we've been the exact same thing basically the entire year. We've only been a couple games under 500, a couple games over 500, but basically been the same thing. And there's been this, oh, it's a marathon where, well, you can lose a marathon in mile 9. Yeah. And you can go off track. You can get knocked off of it. Can't win it in mile 9, but you can lose it. And so that course correction, the longer that it goes without being corrected, the harder it is to get on track because the further off track you've gone. And so that's something that I'm very much seeing with this group. And so I don't know if there's a magic elixir in the bigger lineups and all of that. That said, I do think that there's a certain amount of belief in the, well, if we did the stuff that we did last year, at the very least, I think there's some buy-in and some like, we've seen this work before that fosters that belief. But yeah, I think the team's in a dangerous spot.
Well, if you're a longtime LFR listener, right, a lot of the themes that we've been talking about are based around, like with this group, are based around LeBron and AD and, you know, these 4+ years and sort of what has worked around them. And when they first started, like that 1920 season, and had so much to prove, AD just being traded for and LeBron having, you know, yet to win in LA based off that young roster his first year, like they were charging through that 1920 season. Those two, like just like the pop on the floor and the aggression and the kind of the night to night, we're going to win these games. And the team just went with them. Like one of my favorite stats from that year that I've cited before is they won 17 straight Western Conference road games. And just think about now how hard it is for them to get one win on the road in the West. And they were beating good teams every night. And so then as the years go on, though, and of course, LeBron now being in year 39, and this was my theme of the offseason, it's going to be difficult to expect somebody to physically and mentally just to come out every night with the pedal down and lead the way again. And yet he's still there. And so other players not only need to step up and do that on the court, but the groups around LeBron and then also AD need to just physically be able to take on what opponents are bringing. And look at how Houston and Atlanta played in this last back-to-back. I had watched both of those teams play their previous two games on League Pass, and I'm just going to tell you, they played harder against the Lakers. They did. Mm-hmm. It was a bigger game. LeBron was in their city. You know, in the case of Houston, AD was. AD did not play in Atlanta. And those teams came out hard and aggressive and moving. And the Lakers just physically, to start those games, had a hard time meeting that. And I think, again, it's you've got a small backcourt with Russell and Reeves, and then you've got Prince at the three. There's just not a lot of force there. And relative to a Vanderbilt or a Hachimura to help lighten that load and then just give the team some of that thrust, they can then get to other lineups. And it. And what is the purpose to do it instead? To give spacing to LeBron and AD? I don't know that that's what they need as much at this stage.
There's like a dissonance in the ideas that are discussed about publicly and then what goes on the court. And so let's go to break here because this is too long of a thing to go on right before this. So we'll hit this on the other side.
Strap in.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
It's done. Goal of the year, part of the past, the celebrations forgotten, the history,
Vegas Golden Knights.
History, we're back to a blank slate, clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
How many times has Darvin said, we're going to get other teams' best shots. We're the Lakers. No one's going to feel sorry for us. We can be down on ourselves. We can't get down on ourselves because the other team is going to keep coming, keep coming, keep coming. So that point that you just made about, like, you watch these other teams in the two games before, you could watch them the two games after as well. And the effort likely is not going to be there. And as a longtime Lakers fan, I've seen this up like for years and years and years as of you, Pete. There's a certain amount of, and this happens in every sport. It's like, oh, you're playing the Yankees?
Yep.
This is how it goes. And it's one of the reasons why, too, like way back in the day when Kobe would be like, it's not for everyone. Like, this is not for everyone. That's a part of it too. And so the point that Mike's making, Pete, about what do you need in support of that? How do you best feel yourself for that wave? And the approach that the team is taking is, well, let's just outscore them. But the approach that the head coach is talking about, Darvin, accurately too, is, but we have to be better defensively. And so the dissonance between the how do you accomplish the latter while gearing your lineups towards the former is going to be like, you can't continue to ask these guys to say, like, we're going to stand up to the wave of like athleticism and force that the other team is going to bring at the outset of these games. It's a tricky equation. And
I'm not sure if these guys are being set up to be at their best, to play to their strengths.
Hearing that we got to come out better defensively in the first and third quarters, I let out a crazy person's laugh when I heard him say that, because it's like seeing AD on a massive minutes load, struggling physically, and being the only people on the court. You got three guys on the court that cannot do physical stuff, and then another guy who's literally the oldest guy in the league. And so think about the burden that that leaves on AD to do all the physical stuff. And when I think about that 2020 season, and he is not that player that in physically that he was, but part of that is because he's the person that has to move the couch, right? He's the person that's got to do all of the heavy lifting of the furniture and all of that. And then you can't also ask him to go go do a dance right afterward, right? Like, he can only do so much from each category. And we've really seen him drop off to the point where we've really seen him drop off defensively to the point where that's part of the reason why we're giving up these 130-point games. And so him, like, we don't even play lineups that could possibly free him up to play on the perimeter, right? We've talked a lot about Rui and we've talked a lot about Vando. Another option, which I think, again, I don't think any of the other options are perfect, and I think they all come with downsides, but another option is Christian Wood. He's the one guy that frees up Wood and Hayes. Having a five next to AD actually frees up AD to play some perimeter defense. Right. Having Anthony Davis on your team can really help you solve a lot of problems defensively, Mike. But if nobody else can get a defensive rebound, he's got to be around the basket. If nobody else could even think about blocking a shot, he's got to be around the basket. And so there's so much unexplored territory on the roster that's part of my frustration with, like, well, you're not going to get that doing the same thing over and over and over again. So again, we're in dead horse territory, yeah. but I think that's part of why we're at this point.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the other thing to discuss, and we had a pod on this about the trade deadline, but just, I think there could be some sort of a move, whether even if it's really small, to just give some sense of newness and new opportunity, and then also steal the rest of the roster as to this is what the group's going to be now. And, you know, maybe that break of here's what didn't work in the first half and why. And that's sort of the new hope of the stretch. But the fact that the Lakers are in this spot is, that's the really disappointing part, because I think that, you know, they could probably be a few games better up in the standings had these things been ironed out a little sooner. But just the short term, let's focus on the short term for a second. Boston and New York, both really, really strong at home, just let alone how well they're playing in general, and both really physical teams, and both have perimeter players that can penetrate your first line of defense when they want to. And when that first line of defense, again, is Russell and Reeves, and then Taurean Prince, it's just going to be easy for them to get into the teeth of it. And it's going to require, unless Anthony Davis is in supernova mode defensively and LeBron James is playing like he played in the in-season tournament, where he's basically taking Zion Williamson out, even then you're in trouble, because they're going to have to do that for a whole game with these two teams that can do it. So forget the offense for a second, because that's part of where, when teams talk about things starting on the defensive end, it's just because you have something that you can sort of count on there. And that is what's been absent in, what have they, I think the Lakers have given up 130 points in four straight games. So, you know, it's going to be tough to win games in those contexts. And you can maybe take out the Golden State game because it went to double OT, right? Like, the Lakers played well enough to win that game, and it wouldn't have gotten that to that point. But here's the short-term thing that I was talking about, though. Jared Vanderbilt right now, average minutes played on the team, and a lot of this, again, is because he was injured early in the season, but is ninth at 20.2. Rui Hachimura, who has been injured and therefore out of games, but is healthy certainly now and playing well, is eighth in minutes played. You can, if you want, you could bump them each up a spot, because Gabe Vincent is, in his five games, averaged 25 minutes. So then, okay, fine. So say seventh and eighth then. Those are two guys that I think, especially in this stage of LeBron's career and with AD carrying such a load, they just have to be playing more. And the way to do that, to me, to bridge that gap of what we were kind of talking about, the early energy Darius and I, and certainly Pete as well, like we've talked about Vanderbilt. But Pete, I don't know when, if you can speak about, I know you were looking into Vanderbilt's offense some and watching some clips of that, but that has evolved to a point where I think it'd be very interesting with the offensive group, where he's figured something out that he wasn't doing last year. And to me, that makes even more sense then to have him be playing more.
Jared Vanderbilt is actually in the best scoring stretch of his career right now since the Brooklyn game. He scored in double figures 5 times. One of them, he got ejected 7 minutes into the game. So he didn't have double figures in the Houston game because he barely played. But D, on the offensive end, Vando is really, that's been the argument against him. And just finished a video called Vando the Cutter that I'm really excited about, that hopefully people get to see in the next couple of days, where a lot of what Vando is doing is kind of addressing the spacing issue with him on the floor. And I don't think it's ever going to be perfect, but I do think that you can achieve spacing in a bunch of different ways. And one of the biggest values of this regular season, where we were talking about continuity going into it, was figuring out the Jared Vanderbilt problem, right? Where he's such a playmaker defensively. He's so important on the defensive boards and in applying ball pressure on the perimeter, all these different ways that keeping him on the court really helps your team. But there are some problems in doing that on the offensive end. And so I think that we've made some great progress amidst this storm. I think that is potentially a really significant event in this Lakers season. So talk to me about what you're seeing from Vando on the offensive end.
Well, it's all the stuff that we've mentioned before. And so I don't want to belabor the points about like where he's cutting from and how he's cutting more. I just think the general familiarity with five out offense with Vanderbilt in general, and the Lakers beginning to start to move him around from the dunker spot out to the corner, from the corner back to the elbow, from the elbow diving back through the lane. They're putting him in ball screens more. They're just leveraging his activity and sort of the live wire nature to his game in general and putting that into an offensive form. We see it defensively all of the time with the way that he's threatening passing lanes, with the way that he sort of jabs and ducks and gets under and over screens, and his sort of like ability to jab at the ball and let ball handlers just sort of feel his presence. He is then on the other side of the floor as defenses ignore him. He's just like, I'm going to do all of this same stuff, but I'm going to do it on offense. So it's just like, I'm in the corner. Nope, I'm at the elbow. Oh, I'm at the elbow. Nope, I'm back into the dunker spot. Oh, now I'm lurking around the baseline. Now I'm jabbing up. Now I'm setting a flare screen. Now I'm setting a ball screen. Oh, short roll, head fake, right? It's just like all of this stuff where it's like, oh, he's just more active. Whereas before, last season, it was Vando's in the dunker spot standing. Vando's in the short corner standing. And it's just like, okay, defenses are going to catch up to that easily. But I'm sorry, Pete. It's just like, I'm tired of even framing the Vando discussion or the Rui discussion as like, oh, well, let's talk about spacing. I don't care about spacing. I'm tired of talking about spacing as the context for how lineups are being built. I'd rather talk about rebounding. I'd rather talk about on-ball defense. I'd rather talk about screen navigation. I'd rather talk about how your activity in the passing lanes makes the opposing offense react to what you're doing. There are more ways to win a basketball game by standing outside of the three-point line. There's more ways to win a basketball game than just saying we're going to operate within the construct of this singular system. Jared Vanderbilt is helping the team win the minutes that he's on the court. The point is to be ahead by the time the final buzzer sounds. The Lakers have played 49 games and have not done that even half of the time. So if we're going to talk about spacing and we're going to talk about the construct of this is how we want to build out lineups, by all means, go ahead. And when 82 games are done, maybe you've won 40 of them. Maybe you've won 41 of them. Maybe you've won 43 of them. But at that point, you're going to need to win two more just to get into the damn playoff to face the number one seed. I'm tired of the whole discussion about why a player can or cannot play or start next to LeBron James and Anthony Davis and Austin Reeves and D'Angelo Russell, who also need support in these exact ways. Let D'Lo and Austin space the floor. And speaking of Austin, let Austin start to make some threes too. He needs to start showing that he can space the floor a little bit more too. I don't want to put this whole discussion on like, oh, what Prince is or is not doing, what this player is or is not doing. Every single player has said in some way, shape, or form, do your job. Look in the mirror. The head coach has said it. LeBron James said it. Austin Reeves has said it. It's time for this entire group to say, what can we do better to help the team win? And I'm tired of it just being about like, oh, well, who's making 39% of their three-point shots or 38% of their three-point shots? Because there's more ways to win a basketball game than just that. Sorry. I just had to get it off of my chest. We've been talking about it this way for way too long.
Amen. Let's take a break here. And when we come back, let's talk about some of those ways to win.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
So Mike, in terms of getting through the storm, I think that whole idea of you do it on the defensive end first is absolutely right. And we've got a couple of really tough ones, like you said, in Boston and the Knicks coming up to do that. But that to me is the first way out. And so what does that mean to you, Mike, about like kind of getting a hold of the rope again on the defensive end? How can this team get it back on track?
Well, to one of Darius's points, I think there's in the NBA, when you're playing against opponents that are good, it's just too hard to say this group you just have to be better. You have to rebound better. Sometimes you're outmatched in the certain lineups physically. And I think that's what's happening with the starters, where I don't know that if Austin Reeves and D'Angelo Russell say the one thing we're not going to do today is give up an offensive rebound to a guard and or get blown by on the perimeter. That's all we're going to focus on. It might not happen. It might not happen because that's not their primary strength. And so if you're going to play them together, the other end of the floor has to be so good that you essentially are just outscoring teams. And, you know, that starting group, it's not like they're getting for the first couple of games. It wasn't like they were getting killed. They were scoring about as much and the net rating was like right around zero. And then the last couple of games, it's gone the other way. Especially in the third quarters, where third quarters they were getting overwhelmed physically. And then in Atlanta, that actually happened a little bit in the first quarter as well. So it's becoming more of a theme now where I think that in the collective group there, I don't know that there's something they can just do a lot differently. And that's when it gets back to the point of saying, why I keep bringing up Hachimura and Vanderbilt and why we keep citing what the lineup data is when the three position is bigger relative to smaller. That's sort of the point I think that we've hit where the evidence has become so clear sort of on top of the eye test that I think it's difficult to keep doing the same things. And, you know, if that's what's going to happen in Boston again, the way for them to win games while the lineups are sort of going as they are is that you get LeBron to go into the supernova mode when he had a 36 point triple double with 20 rebounds at Golden State. And then Anthony Davis is also doing everything. Like that's how you could put almost any three guys in certain next to those two when they're playing like that and have a chance to beat most teams. But that's the problem of that's the not sustainable part of why they're 24 and 25. Because when that is not there and or D'Angelo Russell isn't hitting 8 threes, you know, they're not winning games easily, right? By the groups just fitting together well.
And a team like Golden State is one of the smallest teams in the league. And so they're going to put pressure on our weakness in that respect less than other teams will. In terms of just an overall attribute I'm looking for, D, is just guys that run. This is something that when we talk about Vando and Rui, we talk so much about half court type of situations, but this time of season, especially like the guys who run what Cam Whitmore did the other day by just hauling ass up the court, like you can do a lot, especially this time of year, and be productive in that respect. And so that is something that as I see the spirit of this team kind of teetering on the brink, I see fewer and fewer guys running on more and more possessions. And so like guys who run, Jackson Hayes, as goofy as he can be and how as many illegal screens as he can set and all of that, I think he had like 4 steals in that game. You can always count on him to run and play with a certain amount of athletic verve that I think if channeled in the right direction in the right circumstances is actually very helpful, especially on a team that doesn't run a whole ton. But that to me, D, is something I think is right at top of mind, is like you got to run the floor, and that when a team loses its verve is one of the first things to go. And so that's something that's really on my radar right now, is just from possession to possession, are you walking up the floor? Are you running up the floor? And this goes from the stars all the way to the youngest guys on the team. There have been a few times this season, our G Leaguers, there was one little stretch in the Atlanta game at the end where we had waved the white flag. We put our end of the bench guys in, but they had their starters in. Atlanta did. They hadn't pulled their guys yet. And our young guys got beat to a loose ball, and they ended up getting a rebound and then a layup off of that loose ball. And it's like, yo, your G Leaguers can't be getting out hustled by stars who are up 15, 18 points in a game that are in just another game, right? Like, to me, that's a sign of a bad culture. So anyhow, the ability to run is super important.
Yeah, and I'm mostly looking at this from a transition defense, and Rui needs to run harder. Wood needs to run harder, right? Like, if we want these guys to be bigger, we want the lineups to be bigger. Like, I have no concerns about this with Vando. Vando might have a possession or two a game where he like gambles in the backcourt for a steal, or he crashes the offensive glass and isn't sprinting as hard because he's behind the play a little bit. This dude plays hard.
Yep.
He is running hard. But the play where LeBron got that chase down block against the Hawks and no one recovered back to recover that loose ball and Rui was late.
This was in context, by the way, of the Houston game where the end of that first quarter, Rui was the guilty party on a couple of those as well. So this is happening in context of it already happening.
These guys do need to run hard. I want to zoom in, though, about Boston specifically. So the last time the Lakers played the Celtics was actually during that stretch of the season where Darvin went to the like all defense lineup. I believe Vando and Prince both started, but it was interesting because the matchups were not exactly what I would have liked defensively. And so Cam defended Tatum to start the game, and Vando was on Brown. And I thought Brown was a little bit too shifty for Vando, especially that version of Vando, which was still sort of ramping, like in his ramp up period. And even though he was starting, like he was not the version of himself physically that he is now. Later on during the game, Vando ended up getting possessions against Tatum, and he was much better against Tatum than he was against Brown, at least from the eye test. I haven't looked at the matchup numbers.
Assuming that it is D'Lo, Austin, Prince who are going to start on the perimeter,
and Porzingis is back now. He had been dealing with, I think, an ankle. I can't quite remember, but he had missed some time, but he's back now. And so, defensively,
AD or LeBron are going to have to guard Porzingis, right? It's probably going to be AD.
And then that puts LeBron on one of the Tatum, Brown, White, Drew, right? And so normally LeBron is on one of the lesser shooters of that group, which would likely be Holiday out of all of those guys, which means Prince, D'Lo, and Austin are splitting up White, Tatum, and Brown, which is, that's difficult already. And so
just zeroing back into to this game and not being defeatist and being like, well, it's not going to happen. What are a couple of strategies that you think are they're going to go to? Two things that I'll kick to you. How viable is switching, especially like 1 through 4, because of the size of these guys? Switching against Porzingis is a trickier thing because of how good he can be in terms of like mid-post up stuff. And how viable is the zone against a team that wants to shoot threes already? And so talk to me about defensive strategies within the context of what has been the starting group against a very good Celtics offense.
Yeah, this is the types of things that coaches talk about in coaches' meetings preparing for a game. Switching, I don't think, is viable against the Celtics. For one, the 1 through 4 stuff matters to a degree, but not a whole ton. Porzingis will absolutely eat up switches. I also think that their perimeter players, Tatum in particular, can do that. What you're describing in terms of that starting lineup versus our starting lineup is just a massive difference in terms of strength. If you look across that, you know, D'Lo versus Derek White, Austin Reeves versus Jaylen Brown, Torian Prince versus Jason Tatum, right? That these are, or and even LeBron, right? LeBron obviously is physically strong, but in total across the board, like they're just way more physical than we are. And so usually when a coach is faced with that problem, the approach, especially at lower levels, is to run a zone. Now, is that dangerous against a team that wants to shoot as many threes, that is good at shooting threes like the Celtics are? Absolutely. I think it's the best of a bunch of really bad options considering the lineups. And even if everything was perfectly optimized, it would be a tough game, right? But that is typically how that's addressed. If you have a team across from you that's way bigger than you, way more athletic, is you usually run a zone. I'm a big believer in having two types of zones, one that is a two-guard front and one that is a one-guard front. So when I was coaching, that was a 2-3 zone, which is the most common zone, and then a 1-3-1 zone that had a lot of ball pressure elements to it. And so I think it's important to build out your zones over the course of a regular season. And I think it's one of the reasons why Miami wins all these playoff series that they probably shouldn't win considering the guys that they have, is like they have certain pitches to go to that I think that's one of the best things you can do with the regular season. We are nowhere near that developed in our zone principles, and we certainly don't have two different ones, much less really one that we run well. But that's typically what teams do is if you're outmatched athletically, you try to go into a zone and force them to beat you with jumpers.
Remember on the Christmas Day game, the Lakers started Vanderbilt and Reddish alongside Prince, Davis, and LeBron. That was when both Austin and D'Lo were coming off of the bench. So just different, right? Team was playing different then. And that team actually, like, they played hard in that game. Boston came out and just was ridiculously on fire for the first couple of minutes of that game. And so they win the first quarter by 9 minutes, by 9 points. And the Lakers spent the rest of the game, like, really trying to fight out of that. But Boston started the third quarter as well with a big run. And so this is going to be, you know, a different matchup in a different game. And this is where you're getting to just physically, as you said, Pete, like there just isn't really a great matchup with the current lineup. I think you could get get to one, but they're not going to. I just don't see a new lineup coming in against the Celtics team that has been playing cohesively together and being rewarded with wins and spirit coming in, that it's going to be very difficult for the Lakers to just find it, you know, tonight in this kind of a context. But that doesn't mean that they shouldn't try. And I'm just curious to see, Darius, what they end up going to for schematically for a contest like this.
Yeah, so assuming they're going to play man-to-man, which I do assume that, I do think that this is a game where you can play some zone. I think that this is a game where if you're going to play man-to-man, that you have to ask LeBron to take on a harder defensive matchup, and he's either going to need to guard Tatum or Brown. I don't see a solution outside of that, honestly. Or you put AD on Tatum and he guards Porzingis. Like, I don't think, whenever the Lakers have tried to say there is this apex predator wing out there, LeBron, you've got the other guy, the Lakers have not done well defensively. And guys like Austin and D'Lo have gotten exposed to a certain extent. If Like, the matchups I would prefer to see in this game, actually, is LeBron on Tatum. I'd like to see Prince on Brown. And then I would put Austin on White. And then I would have D'Lo guard Drew, basically. And I think that from a physicality standpoint, like, you're giving up a bunch still, but you're matching the Celtics as much as you possibly can within the context of that starting group. Do I envision that that's what's going to happen? I'm not exactly sure, but I don't think you can tell Austin to go out there and guard Jaylen Brown, which is what would typically happen within the construct if LeBron is on Holiday or White.
Honestly, both of those sound like barbecue chicken to me, you know, in terms of at this point, like, LeBron staying in front of a guy like Tatum, or Jaylen Brown, as physical as he is at the two, not going right through Torian Prince. You know, there's a lot of holes in the boat right there. And so I think that I have passionate beliefs about how to play a bad hand. I think that, unlike the team a couple of years ago, that there are better hands to play, that I would, you know, rather go to that than have to do all this problem solving of like, okay, we're a lot smaller than that. Do we play zone? Are we going under more screens? All of the things that you have to consider when you're operating at a disadvantage. And so trying to minimize those disadvantages in the first place, I think we have the opportunity to do that, but we're 50 games in and we really haven't to the degree that we could. So anyway, we will be back tomorrow to discuss how the game went. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. With his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance,
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddie pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant, picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it!
Bryant! Unbelievable. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yes!
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.